Are you looking for the perfect gift for the writer in your life? Are you the favorite writer in your life and you want to gift yourself something awesome? Then come take a look at the Ultimate Planner for Writers for 2025. It not only allows you to plan for your regular day-to-day with hourly time slots, it also allows you to brainstorm, research, plot, outline, do scene planning, and vision boarding all in one. And it's available as a physical planner or as an e-planner. Check out Bianca Murray and find the Planner for Writers tab for more information. Remember to order early to avoid the end of year rush. The last beta reader matchup of the year is happening now in November, with the matchup emails going out on the 2nd of December. Please note we won't have another one until after February of 2025. You know the drill by now. 3,000 words of your work will be critiqued by those writing in a similar genre and or time zone as you critique their own work in return. If you already have a writing group or beta readers who've looked at your work before, it's not considered cheating to get fresh eyes on your pages. Critique fatigue can set in when the same people read the same revisions too many times, meaning they anticipate all the action rather than truly being surprised or delighted by it. Give yourself the gift of good critique this holiday season and sign up before the 2nd of December. Go to my website, biancamurray.com, and look for the Beta Reader Matchup tab. Hi there, and welcome to our show, The Shit No One Tells You About Writing. I'm Bianca Murray, and I'm joined by Carly Waters and Cece Lira from PS Literary Agency. We'll be kicking off today's episode with our usual Books with Hooks segment, after which we'll go to today's guest. Hi everyone, welcome back to another Books with Hooks. Remember, if you want to submit for this segment, you can go to our website, The Shit About Writing, look for the Books with Hooks tab, and you can do your submission there. And if you have submitted in the past and you weren't chosen, you can wait 2 or 3 months and then you can revise and resubmit. Right, Cece's going to kick us off with the first query letter.
Dear Cece, a writing buddy recently told me about the Shit No One Tells You About Writing podcast, and I have been binge listening the episodes ever since. A big thank you to Carla, Bianca, and yourself for all of your advice. It's so helpful to hear about the challenges and success stories of other writers. Between Jesus Christ and Prince Charming, I needed to choose a savior. When the communion wafers started tasting stale, I met Charlie and thought he might be it. I am contacting you because you are looking for the next Educated by Tara Westover, and because you consider that a good memoir reads like a novel, packed with tension, conflict, and stakes. My memoir, 118,000 words, is a cross-pollination of Westover's bestseller and Lena Dunham's Not That Kind of Girl. Committed to dark humor, this coming-of-age story shares how I distanced myself from my family and church's dysfunction, while discovering hope through friendship and education. It will likely appeal to anyone interested in learning more about oppressive religious communities, as well as new adult readers in search of make-your-own-savior kit. As a teenager, I gave birth to monsters in my dreams. I donned a purity ring and promised to save my first kiss for marriage to make the nightmares go away. Enter 17-year-old Charlie, a bassoonist with a love of Kurt Vonnegut. After borrowing his books and writing in his car, I decided to date him, defying my parents' wishes and God's for the first time. While my mother wrestled with her own family secrets and our chaplain father clashed with my neurodivergent sibling, I turned to friends from school, tumbling into a world of drinking, drugs, and addiction. I used to be a Christian soldier, but that's not information I share on job applications. By the time I moved to France at 19, I'd long retired from God's army. Now I live in Nantes, where I lead a monthly writers group and I'm currently pursuing a PhD in American literature. I have a master's in general and comparative literature from the Sorbonne and have experience writing articles as a content manager for a business school here in France. I have attached the first 5 pages and would love to send you my full manuscript if you're interested. Thank you in advance for your time and consideration. I hope to hear from you soon. Warm regards, Michelle.
Thank you, Cece. I think you said we needed to play a drinking game every time we did a comp to educate it. So we are all having a sip of something now. Okay, what was the word count there and what was your take on that?
So this one came in at 420 words. I'm going to say it because we have to point this out. You misspelled Carly. You wrote Carla, which is another name, which is why I think your spell check didn't catch that. Typos and names happen. You don't have to beat yourself up over it. But like double check if you can. It's a minor thing, but I wanted to say it just in case you hadn't seen it. Let's start with the very, very first one-liner. You know, it's a paragraph that's essentially one line, you know, between Jesus Christ and Prince Charming, I needed to choose a savior. I think you need to remove that. It's a great line. Like the whole between Jesus Christ and Prince Charming, communion, wafer, turning stale. Like it's good. But I was so confused when I read that. I was like, huh? What am I reading? And Charlie is in all caps. So I was like, is this the title of the memoir? Is it Charlie? That's even more confusing. Like either insert this into your plot paragraph in a way that feels organic and makes sense or remove it. I think you should remove it. You are, again, comping to educated, which you are not wrong. I do want to find the next educated. It would thrill me to find the next educated. And I can see why. Like I can see why you're comping to educated. It makes sense. But then you're also comping Lena Dunham. And like she's obviously a huge celebrity. So I think you need to find a different comp because that's just too different. Like you are not Lena Dunham. I'm saying this with love. And it just won't work in terms of like actual comps that an agent can use when submitting. Your plot paragraph. I made a list of what we know about the plot based on what we have here. We know that the protagonist is rebelling against her family when she starts dating a guy. We know that she tumbles into a world of drug use. Okay, that's what we know about the protagonist and the plot. We also know that the mother has a secret and then the father is clashing with the sibling. But I don't see how these two things are connected. Like, in my opinion, you need to rewrite this query letter to honor the dominoes tipping over effect. And to honor the fact that everything must be tied to the protagonist. The protagonist is your story's son. This is especially true in a memoir. Imagine, for example, that none of us know the story of Cinderella. Like, no one has ever heard of Cinderella. It's not something that we all know, okay? Imagine if someone were pitching Cinderella as a book and they said, you know, she grew up, she's under the thumb of her abusive stepmother and she wants to escape. So she meets talking animals, rides in a pumpkin-turned carriage, and attends a party. And at the end, she must figure out if she will be saved or not. Like, that's just confusing, right? You're highlighting elements of the plot instead of creating a very carefully connected story. You're not doing the whole A causes B, B causes C, C causes D, which we talk about all the time. I feel like we're like broken records at this point. But it's really important because without causality, I'm just getting highlights. I'm getting all these highlights that I don't see how they come together. And I'm sure they do come together. But one of the biggest challenges of writing a memoir is that you might have an interesting story, but are you a storyteller? Now, these are different things. And I hope you are, like, I hope that is you, but your query letter needs to show me that. Your query letter needs to show me that you can bring things together in a way that feels really braided and organic and intentional. Because compelling, you already have. You already have a compelling story, clearly. But it also needs to feel tight and connected. So I hope you revise this because I feel like it does need revising because you clearly have a very interesting story to tell.
Thank you, Cece. Can I just say, I love the line between Jesus Christ and Prince Charming. You have got to find a way to braid that in further down. Just please don't get rid of it. I absolutely adore it. Just find a way to make it work. Okay, Carly?
I feel like that line, you can save that for some marketing material. You know, that's your newsletter banner. Like there are so many options for marketing. So definitely, definitely save that line. Okay, so my notes. Like on the technical side, you had Charlie capitalized, which is kind of a common synopsis technique, more in screenwriting, to be honest, than in book publishing. So you don't need to capitalize Charlie's name in all caps. That should definitely not be capitalized. I thought that was the title. And we have a note from this person that they want to keep their title secret, and that's totally fine. So I'm not going to out you, but I thought that the title was Charlie. And so just make sure that we know that that was just a name. Okay, comps. I had the exact same notes, which is these are both super tough. That Kind of Girl is from a celebrity. It's also 10 years old. Educated, it's in a tier of its own. And just for saying educated, I have to take a drink. Okay. All right. So next note. I do feel like while this topic in the story, this is obviously your life, you know, this is a very interesting story. There have been a lot of memoirs in this space. So we really do have to focus on what is unique about your story, because we kind of go from the paragraph, you know, I turned to friends from school, tumbling into a world of drinking, drugs, and addiction. And then you kind of get into what I think should be the author bio paragraph. But because this is a memoir, there isn't really an author bio paragraph. It gets into the, I used to be a Christian soldier, da, 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 da. And then you get into, you know, where you live. And so there's not really an ending to this story, right? A memoir needs a beginning, a middle, and an end. I didn't get the sense that there was an end to this, which makes me feel like, is this a book? Why do we need to write it now? What is the beginning, a middle, and an end of all of this? I also sense that the metaphors in this were, I don't know if the, like, reaching is the right word, but I did not know what I gave birth to monsters in my dreams means. Like, is this a metaphor? Because gave birth denotes that you had sex. And then you, in the next line is, I don a purity ring. So then I'm like, what is happening? Like, is she having some sort of dreams about her sexuality in a way that is at odds with the purity ring? But like, that is a lot of metaphor to get into in terms of like one line in a query letter. All very interesting if like that's where we're going with it. But for a query letter and that being a metaphor, I don't know. I felt like that was maybe reaching there. So yeah, I don't know. I think your brain is working in super interesting ways. It's just as a query letter, we have limited space to get across what we need, which is the beginning, the middle, and the end of what this story is. So those are my notes for you.
Thank you, Carly. So I'm wondering if we show the causality again. So based on the point that you just said, if we say something like, despite donning a purity ring and promising to save my first kiss for marriage, when I was a teenager, I gave birth to monsters in my dreams. Does that show more of a causality that despite having the purity ring, this was such a big thing that even in her dreams, she was giving birth to monsters? Or are you like, that's not compelling enough to kind of be there? Do you feel like it should be taken away entirely?
Cece has something to say. I'll let Cece go first.
I mean, I want to know what both of our opinions are, but for me, it makes it better, the whole despite, smart, but I don't need it. Like, you are focusing on interiority. You're focusing on like dreams that you're having. That's great for the pages. Please keep it for the pages. The skill set that goes behind writing a query letter is just so different from the pages. And the same thing happened with the whole communion wafer between Prince Charming, which I agree is a great line. Does it belong in the query letter? I don't know that it does. And certainly not at the very top. Like, you're dancing tango when you're supposed to be swimming in a pool. You know, like, they're different skills.
Yeah, I don't really have anything to add. I like so much, as I said, about the way this writer's brain thinks. Is this all right for a query letter? Probably not. It probably just needs to go.
Yeah, man, query letters are so freaking hard. I feel your pain, writers. I feel your pain. Okay, Cece, are you going to summarize those opening pages for us?
Okay, so the protagonist is 12 years old, celebrating her purity vow at Red Lobster. She got to choose the place. She's talking to her dad about a vacation they took. They order food. And then there's a second scene where she's 5 and she's on her mother's lap reading a story about Mary Magdalene. And her sister's there too. And we learn about how she grew up thinking it was her job to show others in their community, in her school, how, you know, a good life was lived under the principles of Jesus Christ.
Thank you, Cece. Okay, so I'm going to be assuming that this is written in the first person since it is a memoir. How do you feel about us beginning a memoir when the character is so young and we're writing in the first person? What's your take on that, and what's your take on the opening pages?
So that is a very good question. I feel like starting a memoir in a scene where she's really young in the first person can work really well. The Glass Castle does it. Aftershocks does it. Sort of. I mean, it's her remembering when she was really, really young. So it's sort of. But Educated does it. And it actually brings me to a really big picture note I have. The reason why all these memoirs I mentioned, especially The Glass Castle and Educated, were so successful is because the author captured the evolving consciousness of a child in a way that was very compelling and was filled with psychological acuity. Again, I feel like I keep harping on about this, but it is so important in any book, especially a memoir. And so right now, she does not seem 12. Like, that is my big picture note to you. I read this and I was like, this is not a 12-year-old. Like, the voice is not of a 12-year-old. To be clear, I know this actually happened. I know you remember being 12. So maybe you're like, Cece, what are you talking about? I am a me. I am writing about me being 12. But it doesn't sound like you're 12. There's a difference between you being qualified to write this, which obviously you are, and being able to pull off the voice of someone who was that age. So I recommend that you go read not just memoirs, but novels, honestly, in which the protagonist is really, really young and it's written in the first person, and see how the authors created that. A really good example is Pet by Catherine Chidney. It's fantastic. The protagonist is, I don't remember how old she is, 8 maybe? I don't know. But it's so well written and she captures the voice perfectly. So it is a challenge because writing in the third person when you're writing from a child's point of view is typically easier. But in a memoir, you can't do that, nor would I recommend it. So yeah, it's hard. So the other note I want to talk about, which ties into my big picture note, is, again, I want to talk about psychological acuity and how important psychological acuity is. And I'll use a scene from these pages to exemplify what I'm saying. We have the protagonist at Red Lobster, which is a restaurant she chose because it's her special day. And she tells her dad that she was thinking of getting the lobster because she's never tried lobster. And the father says, "Get whatever you want, Michelle. This is your special day." She looks at the lobster tank and sees all the lobsters crammed together. And then she orders the tilapia just like her father. Now, is this a good excerpt? Is this like good dialogue? Yeah, the dialogue's well written, but it's missing interiority. When she tells her dad, "I told him I was looking at the lobster, but I was worried it was too expensive." What is she anticipating his reaction will be? Like, is she thinking that he will say what he ends up saying? Is she expecting him to say something else? I want to know what her expectation is because that will inform his response. And when she decides not to get the lobster, I know that we have a moment of her looking at the tank, but I don't know if that's actually the reason why she doesn't get the lobster. Is it? Or is it because her father got the tilapia and she wanted to please him? Did she clock in his reaction after she ordered the tilapia to see if he would be pleased by her decision of being perhaps more frugal? Or is it something else? Did she immediately feel disappointment when she ordered the tilapia? I'm mentioning all these things because they don't actually take up a lot of space, clocking in expectations, clocking in interpretations of reactions, but they go such a long way, like such a long way into developing psychological acuity. How someone interprets others' actions changes wildly depending on not just who you're talking to, which is obvious, but who you are, what your relationship is like. Like, it just makes such a big difference. Each 12-year-old girl on this planet having that same dialogue with her father at the same restaurant would be thinking something different, would be expecting something different. And the uniqueness of that is really, really important. So you have the potential here. I just think you need to develop more. And that really just takes time. That's normal. That's a huge part of the storytelling process. But I'm excited to see what you can do with this.
Awesome, Cece. Thank you. Carly, your thoughts?
I'll go with just one main note, which is that I felt like even though we were in scene, there was so much that was summary of different events or the past or I don't know, just things about what she thought was going to happen. You know, on the first page, she talks about everything about tonight was perfect, being able to spend time alone with him like this, getting out of the house. He'd even let me choose the restaurant for a special father-daughter date. Like, to me, that's like, is that factual? Is that synopsis? Like, you know, I was kind of like, huh. And then later on the next page, he says something. I remembered that. I must have been about 7. We'd gone to the time chair. You know, it's like, something would happen in the scene and then right away that paragraph would take us into a bit of summary. And so I really just wanted to be in scene more. And I think, you know, Cece's given great ideas about how to stay in scene more and an opportunity to get into that psychological acuity. Because I felt like every time we were just like getting into the moment, I was getting taken back out of it. So I would just be kind of guarding against that, watching for that, because that was something that flagged for me.
Okay, thanks, Carly. All right, we're now going to look at our second query letter today. Will you please read that for us?
Who has a language barrier with loved ones that they see during the holiday season? My husband's family is Italian, and when the men are in the kitchen cooking, and yes, it is all the men in his family that cook, they sprinkle in their Italian sayings, like one of them asked, does it need more salt, or how much time does it need? And the other says, quanto basta, which means as much as needed, aka lay off me, it'll be ready when it's ready, with the right amount of seasoning. Memories of good food, sharing language, and warm kitchens is so special at this time of year.
Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app, and truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Italian. Rosetta Stone is a trusted expert for 30 years, with millions of users and 25 languages offered: Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, so many more. Another important thing is fast language acquisition. Rosetta Stone immerses you in so many ways. There are no English translations, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in that language. It's an intuitive process. You're picking up a language naturally, first with words and then phrases and sentences. There's speech recognition. They have a built-in true accent feature that gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's convenient, flexible learning, anytime, anywhere. Learn on the mobile app or on your desktop. And it's amazing value. Lifetime membership for all 25 languages. Very impressive. So don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a short time, the Shit No One Tells You About Writing listeners can get Rosetta Stone's Lifetime Membership Holiday Special. This offer will not last. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your holiday offer at rosettastone.com/today, today, for yourself or as a gift that keeps giving.
Dear Carly, first, I want to thank Cece, Bianca, and yourself for your incredibly useful podcast. I'm resubmitting this query after extensive soul searching, nail biting, and emotional overeating and rewriting. Hopefully you can advise me on how to take it from okay to stellar. Completed 89,000 words, Here Comes Victoria is a YA steampunk story that will appeal to lovers of spunky female protagonists, such as in A Most Agreeable Murder and the quirky universe and found family trope that can be found in Howl's Moving Castle, the anime. Following the reception of a cryptic letter from someone who might or might not be her estranged father, Victoria is more desperate than ever to find out who killed her mother. The problem is that the world won't let her. Being a single young woman in Montreal's 1870 leaves her little agency to live her life as she sees fit. Fortunately, she's armed with a bionic hand, an AI-trained typewriter, a stolen Zeppelin, and most importantly, three allies willing to secretly cross the Atlantic with her to solve the mystery. Once she lands in London, the biggest metropolis in the world, Victoria discovers that the fate of her parents is entwined with a lethal scientific discovery. With the help of Frank, her best friend, and maybe more than her friend, but love is complicated when a girl doesn't want to get tied down, a stowaway thief named May, and a retired time traveler named Joe, Victoria will need to outsmart the high society forces poised to unleash an epidemic upon the unsuspecting population of the city, and hopefully discover the truth about her mother's death along the way. After working for over 20 years in communications and marketing for various nonprofit youth organizations, I have recently become a freelancer to focus on my writing. As a Montrealer, I am fully bilingual and an avid reader of both French and English literature, the latter of which I studied in university. Thank you for your time and consideration, Isabel Houdin.
Thank you, Carly. Okay, word count there and your take on that.
All right, so we're clocking in approximately 334 words. Okay, so let's start with the comps as usual. So neither of these are in your genre, which is a bit of a question mark for me. I would definitely think there has to be some steampunk YAs that we can comp to here. I don't know that category in and out by any means or really at all, so I can't really offer any comps for you. So I would definitely recommend calling into our comps hotline and potentially utilizing that service that we offer, because I can't give you the answer, but I know that these ones aren't going to be quite right because an agent and an editor neither could use these. So I would be coming back to that section. Overall, as a premise, this is super interesting, right? I think you did a really good job of talking about the stakes, not only for the situation and the time period and the character and the world that they live in. So I think you have a lot of the stakes elements set up properly. So I think that works. A couple things I want to focus on kind of word choice wise. The line that says, being a single young woman in Montreal's 1870 leaves her little agency. I felt like we're missing something. Like, in Montreal's 1870 what? I don't know. It just felt like there was a word missing there. And then when you say, when she lands in London, comma, the biggest metropolis in the world, comma, I think that's pretty obvious personally, unless there's, again, something else you're trying to tell us about your world where it is the only city, or again, this is steampunk and therefore, you know, your world could be a little bit different. But at that time, London would probably be the biggest, at least English speaking metropolis in the world. So I don't know. I don't know if we need that little line there. I don't think we need to name the friends because you say in the one paragraph, three allies willing to secretly cross the Atlantic. I love that. And then in the next paragraph, you know, you kind of like stowaway thief and retired time traveler. I'm like, I don't know them yet. And they're not really contributing to the story. So I think you can just stick with your three allies. I think that would be fine there. In the author bio paragraph, I really like that you explain, you know, you're a fully bilingual, avid reader of both languages. I think that's super interesting. So those are my notes.
Thank you, Carly. Okay, Cece, what have you got to add?
I just feel like my new anthem is, you know, I love you writers, but you're giving me disjointed plot points. Like, I don't know what the bionic hand AI trained typewriter stolen Zeppelin. And then we have another line that's like, there's Frank, and then there's a stowaway thief, and then the retired time travel. You're highlighting things. You're listing things. The query letter should not be a list of elements. The query letter should be a compelling promise of the story. They're very different things. And I know it's really hard. All the empathy. All the criticism comes with a lot of empathy. But it's still true. You still have to do it. So I think you need to revise. I think we need causality. We need dominoes tipping over. We need all the stuff that I keep harping on about. Feel free to ignore me because I also am mindful that I don't read YA. It's not true that I don't read YA. I don't represent YA. So I'm not well versed in it. So, you know, you get to say thank you so much, Cece, but no thank you.
Which is true for all the advice we dispense on the show all the time. Right. Okay. Carly, will you please give us a summary of the opening pages?
All right, here we go. Montreal, Canada, September 1870. In a world, .. almost like ours. All right, so Victoria is our main character. She is hungry. She has nothing in her pantry. She's very, very hungry. She is kind of driving around through the different city streets on her way somewhere, zigzagging through. We're kind of getting a picture of Montreal. She stops in front of the Montreal Chronicle, which is the oldest English language daily newspaper. And she is going up the steps because she is kind of working for them to produce some news articles, but she is a woman. And so she's not allowed to use her name. So she is talking to John Marshall, who is the owner and editor in chief of the paper, about the whole situation. There's kind of a familiar banter between them. And then we find out he's a pseudo uncle to her. Not biologically, but, you know, one of her father's oldest friends. He kind of explains that, you know, because she's a woman, that she can't do this and that, and the other. And then they talk a bit about the dad's disappearance. And that's where we end.
Wonderful. Thank you. Okay. What was your take on those pages?
All right. So I really liked this kind of drive through the city and naming different stops as she, you know, she's naming like driving down Notre Dame Street, you know, making a turn here, describing the heavy wooden door, the Montreal Chronicle. So I really did get a good sense of place and setting. So I think you did a really, really good job there. Coming back to the, and I mentioned this a couple of times in my summary because it was mentioned a couple of times in the pages, is about how hungry she is. And she, you know, she needs the money from the writing to feed herself, basically. It's mentioned a number of times. I flagged where I think we can cut things and make things a little bit simpler. But I do think, obviously, you know, being hungry and needing food is a great motivation for a character, especially one who has some of life stacked against her. I like the introduction of some subtle things that explain that this is steampunk. So there is this typewriter, the Uber script typewriter, 1900 is what it's called. It was invented 3 years prior. They're using it in their journalism. The machine can render any muddled thoughts into coherent sentences in an instant. This is kind of the promise of that AI machine that was mentioned in the query letter. So we're starting to kind of get a sense of the world, get a sense of how technology is integrated into it in a subtle way through the actual interworkings of the office. So I thought that was really good. I think we have a lot of potential here with the dialogue between herself and John Marshall. So I like that they're a bit familiar with each other, but then I'm kind of like, if they are that familiar with each other, there's probably some other things we can do with that moment of dialogue. Some of it did feel familiar, the sense of like, he's saying, your work won't be taken seriously if people knew it was written by a woman. And then she says, you know, you mean you wouldn't take it seriously? And then he has the good sense to look embarrassed. And, you know, I know it isn't fair, but I didn't make the rules. And I'm paraphrasing a bit here, but it is a familiar trope. And it's something that we have heard before. So what is it that's unique about her particular situation? And the fact that they're, you know, have this familiarity with each other, again, gives us this opportunity for us to go a little bit deeper with this dialogue. And it felt a little bit rehearsed, you know, a little bit for the sake of the reader. So again, if we're going to keep that dialogue, I would come back to that. I'd revisit it. And that's my notes.
Thank you, Carly. Okay, CC, handing it across to you.
I'm going to do something I never do, which is be brief. I feel like you are doing a really good job at the world building, but it's not layered with emotionality and interiority. And I would urge you to do that. So you don't have to remove any of the world building, just add extra layers.
Yeah, that's the thing when you're writing fantasy or anything like this. You've got to do the world building super fast on top of the interiority, on top of the emotionality. And it is really, really tough. So as the kids these days would say, I 100p feel for you, man, because it is hard. It is really, really hard. Okay, Carly and Cece, thank you so much again for your excellent insights. We'll be back again in 2 weeks' time with another Books with Hooks. And we'll see you next week with the author interview.
A reminder that this is an unscripted program and our conversations have been edited and condensed and is not a full picture of our feedback or conversation directly with each author. As always, refer back to our written notes for the fulsome picture. Carly Waters and Cece Lira are agents at PS Literary Agency, but their work on this podcast is not affiliated with the agency, and the views expressed by Carly and Cece on this podcast are solely that of them as podcast co-hosts and do not necessarily reflect the views, opinions, policies, or position of PS Literary Agency. A reminder about all the ways that you can support us as a show: rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, tell your writing friends about us. We'd love to help as many writers as possible. And follow us on our Substack newsletter. Get our stacked newsletter on a weekly basis, bonus videos, articles, essays, advice, and more. You can find it at theshitaboutwriting.substack.com. That's theshitaboutwriting.substack.com.
And that's it for today's episode. I hope you'll join us for next week's show. In the meantime, keep at it. Remember, it just takes one yes. Are you looking for the perfect gift for the writer in your life? Are you the favorite writer in your life and you want to gift yourself something awesome? Then come take a look at the Ultimate Planner for Writers for 2025. It not only allows you to plan for your regular day-to-day with hourly time slots, it also allows you to brainstorm, research, plot, outline, do scene planning, and vision boarding all in one. And it's available as a physical planner or as an e-planner. Check out Bianca Murray and find the Planner for Writers tab for more information. Remember to order early to avoid the end of year rush. The last beta reader matchup of the year is happening now in November, with the matchup emails going out on the 2nd of December. Please note we won't have another one until after February of 2025. You know the drill by now. 3,000 words of your work will be critiqued by those writing in a similar genre and or time zone as you critique their own work in return. If you already have a writing group or beta readers who've looked at your work before, it's not considered cheating to get fresh eyes on your pages. Critique fatigue can set in when the same people read the same revisions too many times, meaning they anticipate all the action rather than truly being surprised or delighted by it. Give yourself the gift of good critique this holiday season and sign up before the 2nd of December. Go to my website, biancamurray.com, and look for the Beta Reader Matchup tab.